prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free. Good morning, Truth Revolution, where faith and reason can coexist and nobody gets mad about it.
I love it when that happens.
I'm Dave, and with me is Pastor Jeff, as always, from Revolution Church. Good morning.
Good morning, Revolution Church. Come on out this morning at 10:15 a.m. You need to take off your PJs right now, and if you don't have time to take them off, just come on over.
Yeah, bring them anyway. We've had people, and we've said it before, we've had people actually show up in their PJs, you know, but it's nothing really risque.
It happens every now and then. It happens like every week.
On a constant basis, right? But we're talking about footy PJs.
Yeah. Or we had like our good friend, he was like 350 pounds, had a onesie at our camp out. That was creepy.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
That wasn't church. Just right. Don't be scared.
But, you know, I mean, show up in sweats, t-shirt, whatever. You know, you roll out of bed with sweats on, just kind of tassel the hair and jump in the car.
And faith and reason meet here at Truth Revolution.
Right.
Enough with the onesie pajamas. But do come over to Revolution Church every Sunday morning. We also stream online if you'd like to watch online before you come over, see what it's like. Mm-hmm. You can just go to live.salinarevolution.com. Or you can head over to our website, the radio show's website.
Right, truthrevolution.tv.
That's truthrevolution.tv. There you can ask questions, hear truth shots, which are 60-second injections of truth to your bloodstream.
We have some really good ones lately, so.
Yeah.
It's
actually, the 100th one is going up. Did that go up on Friday, or is that coming up still?
That's coming up.
So, the 100th truth shot.
That's crazy, isn't it?
That's really good. So we're inoculating people to stupidity in their faith, I think. Anyway,
I like the way you put that.
Today, what we're talking about is the old earth, young earth, the biblical view. Normally, what we do on this show is we give evidence for the Christian faith, or we answer questions that people have challenged the faith with.
Right.
Today, we're going to go a little more biblical. We're going to say, to those of us who are Christians, who are believers, what does the Bible say about the earth being old or young? Now, if you are not a Christian and you listen to our show, first of all, I love that you listen. Second of all, I'd want you to know that this show is still for you, because I want you to see where the biblical evidence leads as well.
Right.
I believe the earth is very, very old.
You know, this is not a light subject for some people. This can be a pretty weighty subject, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, you know, tread carefully, because we are treading on some people's dreams.
I know. Sometimes when you talk about this, it's like Christians pull out their
the spiritual shotgun.
Their spiritual AKs, and they're like very angry, ready to fight to the tooth and nail. But like, look, today we're just going to lay out, here's some of the biblical reasons you can believe in an old earth.
Right. Well, see, I believed in a young earth until I started actually taking some of the classes, and really actually the whole thing that got me was the different types of miracles that God put forth. I know we're going to talk about I'm not going to spill the beans. We'll get to that in its due course, but you know.
I believed in a young earth until I actually looked at the evidence for an old earth from someone who was a legitimate biblical conservative old earther.
Yeah.
I'd always heard the old earth perspective from people who are young earthers. Well, this is what the old earthers say.
Right.
But it wasn't accurate.
Right. All right. Well, let's just dive right into it then.
Okay. Now, I'm going to give three mistakes that people make when promoting a young earth viewpoint.
Okay.
Before we get into the old earth.
Remember what I said. Tread softly.
We're going to tread softly.
Okay.
Okay. Evolution really isn't our subject today. But did you know that last Wednesday was the 80th anniversary of the Scopes Monkey Trial?
Was it really? I think I read that somewhere.
This relates to our topic. Don't think I'm just ADD.
I'm just letting you go.
The Scopes Monkey Trial, a young high school science teacher was accused of teaching evolution in violation of Tennessee state law. Illegal to teach evolution there. Now, the Christians technically won the trial. Did you know that? Most people think they lost.
Right.
They technically won. The Scopes, he was fined $100 for teaching evolution. But we really, in the culture, lost, because the lawyer for the Christians, William Jennings Bryan, he gave an unprepared and just factually unviable answer about the Bible and Christianity. He made Christians look dumb.
Right.
Now, evolution isn't our subject today. But when we talk about the age of the earth, Christians sometimes do the same thing.
Oh, definitely.
I'm not saying you have to believe one or the other. I think you as a Christian can believe in either young or old earth. But let's make sure we aren't looking foolish like we made Christians look during the Scopes monkey trial.
Right. Yeah, I've done that myself in the past. Made myself look totally like an idiot.
Well, who hasn't, you know, really? But I believe in an old earth, old universe. I think the universe is around 14 billion years old. I think the most recent estimates are 13.85 or something like that. I used to be a young earther. I can respect the young earther, but here's three mistakes when promoting a young earth. This is not to denigrate the young earth view. This is just to say, hey, my friends, my brothers and sisters who believe in a young earth, I want you to think on these three things. Right. Number one, don't elevate the young earth view to gospel status. You know, don't say that it is essential Christian doctrine. And a lot of my brothers and sisters who believe in young earth, and me when I was one, I would admit and I would say that it wasn't the gospel. I would say it wasn't essential, but that's not how I treated it. I treated people who believed in an old earth as though they were second-class citizens.
Heretics.
Mm-hmm. That's not what they are.
Right.
You can't treat it that way. This is a debate we have, and it's a legitimate debate, and that's fine. But don't elevate it so high, right, emotionally or logically.
Right. And bottom line is that it's not essential to our salvation. And so the Bible tells us, don't argue about such things.
Right.
You know, if it's not essential to your salvation, not a big deal.
That's right. We can debate, but don't divide.
Right.
Number two, don't reject a priori scientific explanations. Sometimes I had done this when I was a young earther. I would hear these scientific explanations and I'd say, bah humbug.
Right.
That's not what my Bible says. Well, don't reject them just a priori. Don't just say, well, that's not the Bible, so I reject it. Psalms 19 and Romans 1 both tell us clearly that God has revealed himself through nature. Special revelation is the Bible. That is God speaking to us through prophets or his word or Jesus. But there's also this theological phrase called general revelation. Means there's natural ways to understanding God. We look at creation and we know God.
Right.
God has given us wisdom and understanding to decipher creation and understand it.
Right. And for those of you, I mean, have you ever stood at night out in the middle of nowhere, looked up at the sky and just became in awe?
Right.
You know, that is...
That
creation
is
speaking to you.
General revelation. Mm-hmm. This is a legitimate thing that theologians for thousands upon thousands of years have taught students of the Bible, have believed in. And number three, don't assume that old earth believers don't respect the Bible.
Right.
I get this one all the time. I've had people leave my church because I believe in an old earth.
Right.
They said, you don't respect the Bible. I said, what do you mean? Well, you came out, you believe in an old earth. And I do, but you don't respect the Bible. You know, don't assume that someone who believes in old earth doesn't respect the Bible. Today, what we're going to do is look at the Bible and the biblical reasons why we can believe in an old earth. I will admit to you freely and candidly, if God said the earth is 6,000 years old, period, and that is exactly what God said, and that is what God meant,
right,
I would believe it was 6,000 years old, if that's what God told me.
But he doesn't make that exactly clear, does he?
I don't think he does, and that's what we're going to look at in the Bible today.
Okay,
we respect the Bible. We also respect science and scientists for what they do. Today, we're going to ask, can you believe in the Bible and an old earth? I think you can, because you cannot read Genesis and speak meaningfully about the age of the earth without understanding the Hebrew language. And here's where we get into some problems.
Right.
Most people aren't Hebrew scholars. I'm not a Hebrew scholar.
All right, all you Hebrew scholars out there, raise your hands.
Raise your hands. I don't see anybody.
Think so.
Hello? Nobody. Okay. So if you're not a Hebrew scholar, you're just not allowed to study it.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. If you're not a Hebrew scholar, you have to invest time into understanding what the Hebrew means.
Right.
And that's what we're going to talk about today, because we've invested a lot of time. Reasons to Believe, Hiras' ministry, has pointed a lot of this out to me, as well as some other studies that we've done. Genesis chapters 1 to 2 really have four different verbs to describe the creation miracles that happened.
Right. And this is what I was talking about earlier.
Yes. You know, when we're going to read these verses from Genesis, but you hear in Genesis, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God created the sea monsters and every living thing that moves, which the waters swarmed after their kind. You know, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. You hear it say, God said, let there be light, and there was light. In Genesis 1:6, it says, God said, let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters. In Genesis 1:9, God said, let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place. Genesis 1:16, God made the two great lights. Did you know that these different words, made, let there be, created, were all different Hebrew words with different Hebrew meanings?
Do tell.
He's smiling over there like, go ahead and just give the answer. The first word that we want to look at is vara. Now, I'm going to pronounce these in a way so you can remember them, how to spell them.
Okay.
Bara, B-A-R-A. Bara. If you want to look it up, even go to Google, type it in, bara. It's used only to describe God's creation. Someone might describe this as a fantastic miracle. God says, be created, and suddenly things are created.
Otherwise known as poof miracles.
Sure, we would call them poof miracles. God said it,
poof,
and
there it
poof,
is.
Right there. All right, bara. An example of this would be Genesis 1:1. And in Genesis 1:1, we hear a poof miracle. It goes like this.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Poof, created.
Awfully like the Big Bang.
Okay, and there we go. Now, I want you to notice something really quickly. Hmm? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Okay.
We already see in verse 1, God is summarizing what's happening. We know from the rest of Genesis that God didn't just go boom and then everything was done in one split second. But that's what Genesis 1:1 implies if you take it super literally. But that's not what it meant. But he does say, I want, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Okay.
Genesis 1:21 and 22 says this.
It says, God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves.
Oh, God what? God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, with which the waters and swarm after the kinds. Right? Mm-hmm. Genesis 1:27.
God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him.
That's right. And then we get over to Genesis chapter 2 that summarizes everything. Mm-hmm. And it says,
this is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created.
When they were created.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, Genesis 2, it's not in the NIV, but if you look in the other translations, it'll say, this is the account of the heavens and the earth in the day that they were created.
Ah.
It's the same word day as day one, day two, day three.
Okay.
It's just a figurative word for day, but that's a different subject. Okay, so bara, poof miracles. And you've heard all the poof miracles in creation. Mankind, great sea monsters, living creatures that move, winged birds. Another word that is used in Genesis is asa. And this means to do something, to make it. It's a generic term, and it really implies that you're recasting existing material into a new form, like using eggs and butter and flour to make a cake.
Right.
Hmm. You asa, then again, I'm pronouncing it so you can spell it, A-S-A, asa. You're forming something out of something that was already created. So this is really interesting. What we're going to read is stuff that already existed here in Genesis chapter 1. God had already made it, but he's using things like a recipe and mixing them to make something new. Genesis 1:16 contains this type of Hebrew word.
Uh-huh.
It says God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He made the stars also. So when it says God made the stars, it's not a poof miracle. It's a mixing of things.
Right.
Kind of like what
mixing
them together.
Yeah, kind of like what we see in formations now.
That's right. Genesis 1:25, God made the beasts of the earth. What? Genesis 1:26, God said, let us make man in our image. Whoa. This has implications. We're going to talk about that on the other side of this break. Go over to truthrevolution.tv right now and consider donating. Listen to our past shows.
Right.
Send us a question, hate mail, challenge, whatever you want.
Truth shots.
And we appreciate you guys telling us you listen to the show. I love it when I meet you guys out there. It's really fantastic. So truthrevolution.tv. We'll catch you on the other side of the break.
You're invited to Revolution Church this Sunday. Don't wear a suit and tie. Nobody else does. Just come as you are. Revolution Church has a special kids program planned, rocking music, and teaching that actually matters for real life. 10:15 this Sunday morning, just music, teaching, and a program for the kids. 10:15 this Sunday morning. Check us out online, salinarevolution.com. www.salinarevolution.com.
Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com. That's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com. K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
An atheistic website has said, simply talk to Christians about heaven. You will be able to feel the absurdity of this notion.
For many, the concept of a blissful afterlife seems
fanciful. They call it imaginary, but is there any evidence that heaven is real?
Well, yeah, but the best evidence doesn't come from popular books about kids who died and came back.
So what is the evidence?
Jesus Christ. He died, literally. And 3 days later, not a few hours, but days later, he left an empty tomb behind and appeared to his followers.
There is plenty of evidence to his resurrection.
Right. And think about this. He actually died and returned, so he knows what the other side is like. And what did he teach about heaven and hell?
He taught that they were real places.
And that's the most important piece of evidence for the reality of heaven.
To hear the evidence about his resurrection, listen to our 30-minute shows on the subject.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same. To be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back.
Yes.
On the other side of that break, we're talking about New Earth versus Old Earth.
That's right.
And vice versa.
Now, we've discovered that Genesis uses four different kinds of verbs to describe the creation miracles.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is a poof miracle. God says, exist, and it exists.
Right.
Whatever it is. The second one was asa, and that means God's using existing material, and he's recasting it. He's putting it together. He's like mixing it in a cake bowl to create something new.
He's in the kitchen.
He's in the kitchen doing some serious work. And one of the things we found that God just didn't do a poof miracle for every animal. Genesis 1:25, God made the beasts of the earth after the kind and the cattle after their kind and everything that creeps on the earth, on the ground after its kind, and God saw that it was good. That is the word that means mixed together. He used existing substances and brought it together. It wasn't a poof miracle when these things were made. Also, God made man that way.
Well, isn't there kind of a contradiction here? I mean, you know, in Genesis 1:27, God created man in his own image. That's
poof miracle.
But down here it says, you know, he used the word, or the Bible uses the word asa.
Yeah, that's right.
Let us make man in our own image. Which one is it?
I love it, Dave. Excellent question. We didn't even plan this.
Right.
It's both.
When
God made man, the Bible even tells us, what did he make us out of?
Dust.
Dust. So he's recasting dust into something new, but then he does a poof miracle. He breathes life into us in a totally new way. So poof, you've got this new kind of being that is different from the beings that were before it.
I see.
At the same time, he used dust to recreate us in his image.
Gotcha.
So this is fascinating because man is both a poof miracle and a recasting of current substance.
Are we the only thing that's like that?
Well, that depends how you interpret the animals. This is one of the verses talks about God created, poof, miracle, the sea monsters and every living creature that moves. And then Genesis 1:25, God made the beast of the earth and the cattle and everything that creeps on the ground. So that could be two different things, or it could be the same thing.
Right.
I'm not going to interpret that for you. Now, there's two more verbs. One of them is haya. Now, these are, and again, I'm pronouncing it so you can look it up, haya, H-A-Y-A, haya.
That's what you say when you karate kick somebody, right?
Haya! Wow. Okay, so that means come to pass, to be. It implies, and this is important, it implies letting nature run its course.
Yeah, basically I set something out there and just let it go.
Yes, it is not referring to things that exist for the first time. These are things that have come to pass. They've come because nature ran its course, and it happened because nature was allowed to do its thing. It's not instantaneous. It's a process over time. Mm-hmm. And these are the verses that use that verb. Genesis 1, verse 3.
Okay. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light.
Let there be. This is not a poof miracle, according to God's word. This is a let there be. It's coming to pass. Nature's going to run its course and something will happen. Let there be light. Genesis 1:6.
Genesis 1:6. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters."
Okay. And so this is the water separating, maybe continents being formed, seas mm-hmm. being formed. This is not a poof miracle. This is something that happened over time. It was a process that occurred, not a poof miracle. Genesis 14 and 15.
Genesis 1, verse 14 and 15.
Yeah, sorry.
Then God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. Let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light to the earth." And it was so.
That's right. And by the way, I missed something in Genesis 1, 6. You know, that also, it says in verse 8, the expanse in heaven. Mm-hmm. It's talking about outer space, the sky as well. We could even refer to that as atmosphere. Here in Genesis 1, 14 and 15, we see all kinds of lights in the heavens. We see sky, more atmosphere, all kinds of lights so that the earth has light. So natural processes, not poof miracles, but natural processes, according to the word of God, created light, stars, atmosphere, and space.
Uh-huh.
Natural processes. The natural process is a billion years of natural processes.
Right.
God did do poof miracle things.
But on some things he didn't.
On some things he didn't. But what about when God makes land?
Okay.
When God makes land, what is happening is you see in Genesis 1, 9, the Bible verse actually says this.
Then God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place,
mm-hmm.
and let the dry land appear." And it was so.
So this word is kava, and again, I'm spelling it or pronouncing it so you can spell mm-hmm. it, Q-A-V-A-H, okay?
Right. Go. And we're going to have these actually on
TruthRevolution.tv. Yeah. Okay, so you can go right there and just look them up anyway. Yeah. I could have pronounced it the right way. Okay, anyway, go kava, whatever. This verb actually means to wait for.
Wait for it.
It means God.
Wait for it.
God waited for it. You could, it would be a legitimate translation to translate this Hebrew word, patient.
Okay.
God said, "Let the water below the heavens be patient into one place." Now, it doesn't make much sense. They say be gathered.
Yeah, be patiently gathered.
The idea is this is something that took a lot of time. So it's the natural processes taking billions of years that created light, stars, and atmosphere. And then God says, "Wait for it. Wait for the land. Mm-hmm. Wait for it. Be patient." When I hear the Hebrew, which is, granted, there's some poof miracles. Like right away, there's some poof miracles.
Right.
Let things exist. And then there's recasting of current material. And then there's processes taking place. And then there's being patient and waiting for it. When I hear these Hebrew words, I have a hard time believing that God intended for us to take these as six literal days of 24-hour time periods.
Right.
So anyway, we're going to come back. We're going to discuss that a little bit more. But right now, I think it's important that we do our Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
All right, Bible Contradiction.
Today's Bible Contradiction is brought to you by
1001biblecontradictions.com.
Oh, I was going to say Ace Hardware.
Oh.
Because Ace Hardware let me borrow a toilet for my sermon on Sunday.
Oh, right on. Yeah, that was funny. You got to go back and watch that one.
Tom at Ace Hardware let me borrow a toilet. I just liked calling them and being like, yeah, this is Pastor Jeff at Revolution Church. I need to borrow a toilet. Don't worry, it's for my sermon. Like, they were really cool, though. He said, no, I listen to your radio show. Let's do this. So,
all right. So thank you very much.
We used it for the sermon. It was weird.
All right. Bible Contradiction.
Yes.
Does God or does God not know what is in everyone's heart? Okay, in Deuteronomy 8:2, it says, remember how the Lord your God led you all the way through the wilderness these 40 years to humble and to test you in order to know what is in your heart, whether or not you keep his commands. That is totally in contradiction to Acts 1:24. Then they prayed, Lord, you know everyone's heart. Show us which one of these two you have chosen. So what is it?
Yeah.
Does God know what's in your heart, or does he test you to figure it out?
Well, again, we're going to use our CRACKED acronym.
As always.
C-R-A-C-K-E-D. Each one of those letters stands for something. The D stands for dialect. You have to know the dialect or the language that is being used here. I don't mean Hebrew or Greek. I just mean the type of wordings, whether they're being satirical, literal, figurative. What are they talking like? Hendrix, in their book, Living by the Book, has said this. Before ever launching into a study of a book of the Bible, the first thing a reader needs to know is what that book's author meant it to be.
Amen.
In other words, what kind of literature was he writing? What literary form did he employ? You see, literary genre is crucial to interpretation. And that's what we're trying to figure out for this. What is the literary genre? What is the wording and the purpose, the type of literary words that he used when he said this? And in fact, Hendrix lists 14 different genres of literature in the Bible.
Right.
Now, when it says God wanted to test somebody, is it saying quite literally God didn't know what would happen and he wanted to test you because he had to see? He didn't know.
Right.
Well, no, God knew by omniscience, but not by experience.
Ah.
It's like a teacher saying, okay, students, what is 10 times 10? And they work on the problem and they figure it out. They get out 10 blocks and then they count those blocks 10 times. And she says, great, we figured it out. Good job. She knew the answer.
Of course.
But likewise, just like the teacher, God isn't interested in theoretical knowledge, but in experiencing that with us. He's interested in us living our beliefs out. And so when God says, I'm going to test these people, he's not saying, I don't know what will happen. He's saying, I want them to live it out.
Right.
I want to see the result and experience the result with you.
Right. Not working in a lab to find out what a result is. He's wanting you to, kind of like a parent with a child, experience.
Yeah, to learn the lessons, to experience it. And that's the answer for Bible Contradiction today.
Bible Contradiction.
You know, what's crazy is when we read in literature today, we can always tell when it's like satire or whatever. But when reading the Bible,
true. You know, hey, we got a question, an online question, and this is a really good one. Let's go ahead and answer this right before the show finishes.
Okay.
And come on over to Revolution Church this morning, 10:15, and the website, truthrevolution.tv.
All right, check it out. Here's the question. Was Pangaea real? I don't believe it happened millions of years ago, but I can't tell if it was real. My pastor says it was. My family disagrees. Anyone have answers?
Pangaea was a supercontinent that existed about 300 million years ago, broke up about 200 million years ago. There's no legitimate biblical reason that I'm aware of to reject Pangaea. So, the scientists say it was real. I'm going with it was real.
Right.
The big point here, this is geology, not theology.
Oh,
you like that?
Totally different ology there.
We're doing a truth shot on this later. So, all right, hey, we're going to do a little extra content on the outside of this if you want to know more about old Earth, young Earth. So go over to truthrevolution.tv if you want to hear a little bit more about this.
Right.
We're going to have maybe 5-10 minutes, however long we decide to talk. Maybe 3 or 4 hours. Who knows?
You never know. We got enough material, that's for sure.
So get to the website, truthrevolution.tv. Consider donating. Come out to Revolution Church this morning. You guys, we love you. We do this for you. Have a great week, and God bless.
Truth Revolution.
And we're online!
All right. Thanks for coming to truthrevolution.tv. Glad you're here. We are going to finish some of this discussion about Old Earth, Young Earth. I don't think we got a ton more, but we do have some extra questions at the end of this that I would like to go over. So, because there's some legitimate questions here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. So check this out.
Yeah.
You, Young Earthers, a lot of Young Earthers tend to make this assumption.
Yes.
Is the Old Earth viewpoint supportive of evolution? Are we saying that just because it took a long time for the universe to come about and for the world to form, oh, we believe in evolution now?
And the answer to that is no. Look, a Christian may choose to believe in evolution or not, but whether you believe in Old Earth or not has nothing to do with whether you believe in evolution or not.
Right.
These are two different subjects.
Right. We still totally believe that God breathed life into man as a man.
Man was a special creation by God. We are not disagreeing with that. If we want to talk about evolution, we got to do a whole different show because that's a totally different topic. Yeah, a
whole different couple of shows.
Yeah, no kidding. We can talk about intelligent design. We can talk about evolution. We can talk about all kinds of things surrounding that. But this was about whether or not the earth is old.
Right.
Whether or not the universe was old. Not about whether or not things evolved. All right.
So is the Young Earth viewpoint only for stubborn fundamentalists?
That's question number two. Mm-hmm. Nah, that's a good question. Now, you see, we've been banging a little bit on the Young Earthers because we used to be Young Earthers, but a lot of you Old Earthers out there, you start acting like, well, if you believe in a Young Earth, you're just some crazy...
Some hayseed. You know,
yeah.
Like uneducated.
That's right. Yeah. You know, that's not true.
That isn't true.
There are legitimate theologians, legitimate scientists who believe in a Young Earth.
Right.
Now, I have to say at the outset, there's not as many scientists that believe in a Young Earth. I don't actually know of any who aren't Christians, but they do exist.
Right.
So just because someone's a Young Earther doesn't mean that they're a stubborn fundamentalist.
Right. Because here, the point is that, you know, if God wanted to make this earth in 6,000 years ago, he could have.
Yeah. If he wanted to make it in 6 seconds, he could have.
But we've shown time and time again that God likes to let things take a natural course.
Right. And the question that we have between Young Earthers and Old Earthers is, how do you interpret this account in Genesis? Right. It's not a question of, do we believe God could have done it? Or, do you think those Young Earthers are just stubborn fundamentalists and they don't care about reading the Bible either?
Right.
Well, no, look, we both have legitimate interpretations of the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so we discuss and we debate. We just don't divide. All right, let's go to question number three.
Should we even attempt to reconcile science and the Bible? Duh.
No, we shouldn't.
Whatever. So, that's what this show is all about, man.
That really is what this show is all about. Reconciling science and the Bible, because science is seeking truth. And the Bible is teaching truth.
Right.
If we do science the right way, it will inevitably lead to the same conclusions as the Bible if you have interpreted your Bible correctly.
Amen.
Here's what I have to say. When scientists look at the earth, or they look at the stars, or they look at whatever, they make an interpretation based on that.
Mm-hmm.
What they're looking at is always true. Their interpretation may be faulty.
Ah, good point.
Same thing with the Bible.
Right.
When you look at the Bible, what you are reading is always true. Your interpretation may be faulty. If you're interpreting the Bible correctly, and if you're interpreting your science correctly, you're going to end up at the same place.
Right. And let's be honest about something. The scientists out there aren't a bunch of quacks. I mean, there are a couple, but I mean, by and large, you know, science and faith really started out in the same vein.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Some of the most famous scientists, Newton, Kepler, Galileo, Copernicus, like these people consider themselves theologians.
Right, first and foremost.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's many of them that wanted to go to seminary and become pastors even. I know of one of them who got even kicked out of seminary because he wasn't a good enough student, and so he became a scientist instead.
Wait a minute.
What? But so these people consider themselves students of God's mm-hmm. creation. So that's important. Now,
Is it bad to reinterpret the Bible according to science? Mm-hmm.
And the answer on this is yes and no.
Really? Why no?
Why no? Uh-huh. It's not bad to reinterpret the Bible according to science because we may have a wrong interpretation of the Bible.
Okay.
It's the Bible that's always true. It's not our interpretations. So if I found out something in science and I'm pretty darn sure that my interpretation is accurate,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't go in line with something that the Bible taught, or I thought the Bible taught,
mm-hmm.
I probably should reassess my interpretation. You know, one of my favorite teachers, J.P. Moreland, he always says, none of you, when Jesus says that he's going to judge the world from the, and the angels are going to come out of the four corners of the earth, take that to mean the earth is flat.
Right.
Right? When science informed us that the world was round, you reinterpreted your interpretation of that scripture.
Definitely.
They used to think it was flat because of that verse. But they reinterpreted because the science made them reinterpret. So it's not bad to reinterpret sometimes.
Right. Four corners is obviously a figure of speech.
Right. And we know that now.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it is bad to reinterpret the Bible according to science because sometimes you have a light science, a hazy science, a fuzzy science that isn't totally proven yet. And it's dangerous to reinterpret a belief about God or a theological system based on something that isn't certain.
Right. I mean, if we were to reinterpret the Bible according to some science, God doesn't exist.
Right. You know? If you were a materialistic scientist, absolutely, who says only material things exist, mm-hmm. there is no spiritual realm. Well, okay, let's reinterpret the Bible that way. No, that would obviously be a terrible reinterpretation.
Right.
And it's not a slippery slope. It's a cognitive decision. Does the science have proof? Is it a legitimate interpretation of real factual data? If it is, then let's look at our interpretation of the Bible. If it's not, then we're not going to.
Right. The Bible is always right.
And so is nature.
Mm-hmm. It's just your interpretation.
It's just the interpretation. Right. The question is, which interpretation is correct? We want them both to be.
Gotcha.
So we're willing to alter our interpretations when they don't line up with each other. So, hey, guys, I want to say thanks for listening to the show today. I'm really glad you jumped on to truthrevolution.tv.
Right.
Dave?
One thing I want to remind people about is what we talked about earlier, is that sometimes these things don't have a weight or a bearing on your salvation, so don't argue about them. You can discuss, don't divide.
Right. I might even say let's argue a little bit for fun, but don't be ticked off at people.
Don't take it personal.
Yeah, let's not divide. Let's not get angry over stuff like this.
Right.
One of the reasons I love Old Earth Viewpoint is because so many of my friends who are non-Christians believe in the Old Earth, and I don't want them to have to become a young Earth believer to believe in Jesus.
Right.
I mean, come on, that's not necessary. Plus, I think the evidence is there, but you know, that's the side point.
Right.
So I want to make them help them believe in Jesus because I think Jesus is important. So, all right. Hey, Young Earth, Old Earth, I love you both. Thanks for joining us, truthrevolution.tv. Come on back next time.
See you next week.